Hello, and welcome to this special SearchSecurity.com podcast. I'm Brandon Blevins. Thanks for being with us. In today's fact or fiction style podcast, we'll be discussing some best practices for using SSL with web applications. Joining me today is Rob Shapland. Rob is a network and application security expert with First Base Technologies and is a GWAPT certified web application penetration tester. Thanks for joining us, Rob.
Hi, Brandon. Thanks for having me on.
Before we begin, I want to mention that this podcast is part of a lesson in SearchSecurity.com's Security School, which you can visit at any time by navigating to SearchSecurity.com/Security School. Rob, to set the stage before we begin, can you give us a brief history of SSL technology? How long has it been around?
Sure, no problem. Well, it's been around since 1994. It was originally developed by Netscape, if you remember, one of the original browser manufacturers. It's used to protect data from tampering interception. That's what it was originally designed for. First of all, Netscape developed SSL 1, which was never publicly released. They moved on to SSL 2, which we've now deprecated because it's got quite a few vulnerabilities in it. The current browser protocols we're using now are SSL 3, TLS 1, 1.1, and 1.2. TLS 1.2 is the most advanced version, and we're using that at the moment in browsers, but they also support older versions. There's some new developments being made at the minute, but these aren't coming into production for a little while yet. So my job as a web application penetration tester is to try and either break the encryption or circumvent it.
Okay, let's quickly explain how this will work for our listeners. I'll read a statement, and Rob, you'll tell me whether that statement should be answered with fact or fiction, and then explain why. So let's get started. Here's our first statement, fact or fiction. SSL means that my web application is secure.
Well, we can say that's fiction straight away. SSL is just one part of the puzzle, really. Although it implies security, it only really protects your client's data from interception and tampering. It doesn't protect your web application itself from attack or the web server that it's being hosted on. There are many other vulnerabilities that can affect your web application. Some well-known ones are SQL injection, cross-site scripting, and cross-site request forgery. These all work regardless whether SSL is there or not. Using correctly implemented SSL is a good start. It's only the very beginning on securing web application. It's actually one of the stronger points of web application security. There's generally easier ways to steal data in this age. We've got malware everywhere. SQL injection attacks are ubiquitous in lots of applications, and social engineering, make a telephone call and ask to have your password reset, and in a lot of cases, from my experience, it's just that easy. In the same way, you wouldn't try and break down a reinforced door if the window was open. You don't try and break down the SSL encryption if there are other areas to go through. So does it mean your application is secure? No, not really, but it's certainly a good start, and it can help secure your web application if it's correctly implemented.
Let's move on to the next statement. Fact or fiction? SSL certificate authorities can be trusted.
Well, that's kind of a qualified fiction. The whole idea of certificate authorities is that they can be trusted. If that trust's eroded, the idea behind them has gone, really. They can issue certificates for the largest SSL encrypted companies. So they can be issuing certificates for Google, Microsoft, Facebook, all the biggest sites that you might visit. Then they must be trusted not to allow anyone access to their systems to issue certificates or steal keys. What's happened recently, in 2011, there was a hack of a company called DigiNotar in Holland and another company called Komodo. And they lost a lot of their data. They lost the ability to control who issued keys. So individuals who broke into their systems could issue certificates, which meant effectively it was used to spy on Iranian internet users. They forged the certificates, and they were real certificates. And browsers just have a list of trusted certificate authorities, and that was in their list. So the browser thought everything was okay and didn't even present any errors. Just last week, there was a problem with a company called Turk Trust, who accidentally, or so they said, issued two certificates that they shouldn't have done. Because browsers trust these certificates again, they were fine and they didn't present any errors. So what happens is these companies get their rights to issue two certificates revoked. There are several fixes being suggested, but these are a way off. So at the moment, the advice is to go with the biggest certificate authorities. Basically, the more expensive they are, often the better. It's the same in anything in life. You pay for what you get for.
Rob, here's another one. Fact or fiction? Browser SSL warnings indicate a man-in-the-middle attack may be taking place.
Okay, well, this is normally a fact. A man-in-the-middle attack can often be categorized by certificate warnings, because what's happening is the man-in-the-middle is forging the SSL connection, and you're getting a different certificate to what you're expecting. But it's not always the case. There's a tool called SSL Strip that basically converts all HTTPS, so secure links, to HTTP. But it can actually forge a correct certificate in certain ways. It's quite complicated, but it can present to you what looks like a valid certificate. And unless you check in your browser to look at the certificate and look at the certificate path, you won't notice that it's not valid, because it's coming from a valid certificate authority. So there are certain ways of circumventing the problem. There's also the issue of positive and negative feedback that are provided to users with regards to certificates. So you get a nice green bar if you're using the correct type of certificate that says to users that my certificate is valid. On the flip side, you get a red bar if you're using a certificate that's not valid. And if an attacker is able to circumvent these issues, they can present what looks like a valid green bar to a user. And it was shown that 60% of Google Chrome users ignore browser warning messages and click through. So even if the man in the middle is not presenting these valid certificates, he's still 60% of the time, and that's on Chrome, which is generally used by more technologically savvy users, he's probably going to be able to get through more than that, unfortunately.
Let's keep going. Next statement, fact or fiction? Deploying SSL is expensive.
Well, that's fiction. SSL certificates can be free. There are some SSL certificates that use what's called low validation, where they don't do massive checks on the user, but they do provide an SSL certificate. It's not a certificate you'd use if you were running a bank or anything like that. However, if you're running just a little website on your own or with a few colleagues, you can get these free certificates. And they go right up to about $1,500 for a certificate that's called extended validation. This is where there's extended checks done on the company that the certificate is issued to. And this is what causes the nice green bar you get in your browser to certain companies. And it's often worth that extra investment to get that level of trust up, especially we were talking $1,500 compared to the cost of developing a web application, which it could run to tens, hundreds of thousands even millions sometimes. It's a very small investment compared to the cost of the development. It's also very low when you compare it to the cost of the loss of consumer confidence in a site that doesn't have an SSL certificate or is using an authority no one's heard of. Everyone expects that padlock icon now in their browser. Everyone expects the certificate to be there. For a big site, you're expecting that nice green message saying that everything's okay. So it's worth that bit of money to make sure your customers are happy. And like with anything, you pay for what you get. So the more well-known the certificate authority, the more expensive the certificate. And again, you've got to look at user trust. People are looking at a certificate from VeriSign, for example, compared to DigiNotar, the one that got hacked a couple of years ago. You get what you pay for. The smaller certificate authorities, they can sign just as many certificates, but they're not necessarily using their own security in the right way. You'll also find that these web services will include SSL certificates and extra services that go along with it. Managed web services would include the SSL certificate, and you'll also get generally some sort of protection thrown in as well. We also got to look at the cost of the processing power that's required to do SSL over HTTP. Basically, modern web servers, cloud-based services should have no problem with this nowadays. Modern computers are well capable of processing many SSL connections. In fact, Google switched over to Gmail into HTTPS in 2010, and they really didn't have to include any extra hardware, any extra machines. They managed to turn it over with almost no overhead.
Rob, here's our last one. Fact or fiction? To improve browser security, MD5 certificates should be replaced.
That's a fact. Basically, what MD5 is, it's a hashing mechanism. It's to make sure that the certificate is valid, showing it hasn't been tampered with or changed in any way. It's a one-way mechanism. So what happens is a string of data is taken and it's hashed with the MD5 algorithm. You get a string of 128 bits, basically. And that's supposedly unique to that certificate. It can be used to validate that certificate hasn't been tampered with. The problem with MD5 is it's vulnerable to something called collisions. This is where two totally separate strings of data happen to have the same hash. So because there's not an infinite number of hashes, occasionally you can get these collisions where two separate things have the same hash. Now, if you can imagine that that's one is evil and one is good, and you can if you can cause the collision, you can issue what looks like a valid certificate, but actually is completely made up and just happens to collide with the same hash. And these are extremely difficult to randomly discover. In fact, you'd be far more likely to win the lottery every week for trillions of years than find one of these collisions randomly. So what researchers have found is a reliable way to find these collisions. It's a very complicated system they use, but they can do it. And in 2008, they managed to prove that a certificate could be issued that wasn't valid, but appeared to be valid because it shared the same hash as a valid certificate. This was used in the Flame malware, which was used to attack nuclear centrifuges in Iran. And it was used to forge Microsoft certificates, so it looked like it was valid. The SHA-1 mechanism, which is another hash type, doesn't actually fix the problem. It's also vulnerable to this type of collision. What you can do about it is you can deploy these new SHA-2 hashes, which range from 224 bits to 512. Basically, what this means is they're trillions upon trillions times more stronger and are not vulnerable to this collision problem. So yes, we should all be using these SHA-2 hashes on our certificates nowadays, and we should be pushing our certificate vendors to be providing these. The biggest ones do provide these, so you can make sure you're running these particular certificates.
Rob, as we wrap things up, what realistic measures can enterprises put in place to deal with the SSL weaknesses we've discussed? With the nature of the problems and the complexity of the attacks, do users stand a chance?
Well, of course, users stand a chance. With correct implementation, SSL can be a great asset. What hackers are looking for is the low-hanging fruit, really. They'll scan various types of websites looking for problems. What you want to be is make sure you're bottom of the list, make sure you've got all the protections in place, that people just aren't going to target you. Unless they're looking for you, your company specifically, they're not going to go for you if there are other easier targets. So you can make yourself highly resistant to attacks against SSL. So you need to be ensured that you're encouraging your users to be using the latest browsers. Firefox, Chrome, Safari, Internet Explorer, they're all pretty quick at patching problems that occur with SSL. So if your users are using these latest browsers, they've got protection there and that's preventing a lot of the attacks. But you can help as well on your web server. So you can choose to only support the strongest protocols and ciphers. So like I spoke about the history of SSL earlier and said that TLS 1.2 is the latest version, and you can prioritize supporting that first, and then you can drop down to TLS 1.1, and in turn you can drop down. It's the same with the ciphers. You can turn off the weakest ciphers, and you can only allow ciphers that are 256 bits in length, for example, which are much less likely to be for the encryption to be broken. And you can make some configuration changes on the server as well. I've spoken about some attacks in the webcast. You can disable compression, which prevents an attack called CRIME. And you can disable insecure renegotiation, which stops an attack both against your users and against your web server directly. And you can choose to deploy the entire application over HTTPS. This prevents some of the SSL stripping attacks I've spoken about, where the user's converted to HTTP rather than HTTPS. And the obvious one that you should be doing all the time is patching your web server up to date. Some of these SSL issues are patched by vendors pretty quickly, and if you're keeping your web server up to date, you can make sure that you're protected against them. However, it should be stressed that SSL is just one part of web application security. All the other elements need to be considered in order to have a secure application. There's no good concentrating on SSL and then ignoring the fact that you've got no lockout policy on your users and your users are using passwords of 123, etc. The other thing you need to consider, there's always a lag between a problem and a fix. For example, if a real-life virus comes out, it takes a while to develop a cure, and you're vulnerable during that time. So if a new vulnerability is discovered in SSL and it isn't disclosed to the vendors before it's publicly disclosed, there's a lag time where it may be being exploited, and there's no protection in place. That's normally quite short. And if you're keeping your servers up to date, you should be protected against most problems nowadays. So yes, there's a lot you can do to protect yourself. Like I said, if you make sure you fix all the major problems, the scanning tools that hackers use to find your websites, find vulnerable websites, they won't be looking at your website because you've got the best protection mechanisms in place. The only problem is if they're targeting you directly. But even then, a lot of these fixes will help then as well.
And that'll do it for this Fact or Fiction podcast. Rob Chaplin of First Base Technologies, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks, Brandon. It's been great.
And thank you for listening. For more learning materials, be sure to visit the other lessons in our security school at searchsecurity.com/securityschool. I'm Brandon Blevins. Have a great day.